Welcome to another edition of No Filter Sports, August 31st. I'll be the first one to say, where did the summer go? Awful summer that it was with all this COVID and rioting in the streets and leagues being boycotted and postponed and no fans. It's been, you know, I got to say, guys, in fact,
before we even get into it,
I mean, you know, even sports is as crappy as they are, it'd be interrupted by boycotts, interrupted by the whole crazy world. It's just, it's almost like I don't care anymore. It's like, call me when it's over. Call me when everything gets back to where it was. I'm so bothered by NBA playoffs in August that I don't really want to watch. I'm really tired of watching baseball with no fans and no people in the stands. It was novel to have it come back, but it just seems so, and tell me if I'm wrong, I'm just depressed today. It's phony, it's fake, it's contrived. I mean, the season.
And see, that's what I was going to ask all three of you guys.
God.
You look at what's going on, and have you, I bet a lot of people, have you felt a little depressed about what's
over everything
with life, about everything? Yeah.
Everything. There's, yeah. You should be talking about how drinking and depression and medication and suicide. It's just the world is falling apart, and we'd hope that let's get sports back. All sports is, to me, it reminds me of how messed up everything is. And then you got, you know, what it's like, I say, it's contrived, it's sterile with no fans. It's like we're suckers. If I didn't have this show, I'd take the year off and say, hey, you know, when everything's back, when we can take me out to the crowd again, when you can buy me peanuts and Cracker Jack, when you can root for the home team, let me know. Call me when it's over, and I'll, like, jump back in.
Well, yeah. I'll show you how crazy this has become. LeBron James is talking about leaving the bubble. He says every player has at least left the bubble once. Hmm. He says even the media has left the bubble. He says maybe it's my turn. He's been in there now 50 days. His emotions are raw. He's upset about just about everything. He says we are having more brawls on the court now than ever before. The tensions, right, you can cut with a knife.
It's like they're raping Luka Doncic in some of these
games. All
of
a sudden, Paul George in the last couple of weeks is now questioning his mental health getting some help for it. Yeah, I imagine being secluded is a real bad place. I have been secluded once or twice in my life. I can tell you, it does not get any better.
But at least you had a roommate. At least you had a roommate in jail.
No, I didn't have a roommate.
Well, that's
a couple
good
of times.
That's a good thing. Danny, did you see this though? The NBA today says it is going to allow players to invite some guests into the so-called campus for the first and second rounds of the restart playoffs. Players' families, longtime close personal friends, now can go into the bubble. The NHL continues to say that they're not letting anybody in until the conference finals this next month, September, in Edmonton. Then family members can come reunite with the players. So it's hard. One of the biggest compliments we get on this show is from so many people who say, man, you know, it's depressing, life's hard, but it's interesting and entertaining and funny to listen to you guys, and you helped us so much throughout this thing.
Geez.
And I appreciate that. Well, they say that, and I appreciate the fact, Eli, I'm with you, it's BS, but I'm enjoying watching the Detroit Tigers play, especially after what happened this past weekend. I see the BS. The crowd noise is turned up way too loud. They got to bring it down. Nevertheless, you know, I don't know. That's kind of a saving grace for me during all this.
Well, yeah, would you rather watch the games in black and white and have fans there than see it in color? I thought about that the other day.
That's interesting.
Anything, you know, the fans, and I think maybe we undersold this, how important they are from crowd shots to the noise, to the, you know, going after a foul ball, to you know, Spike Lee in the court, you know, yelling at the referees. It's just so much of it has been taken out that the sterility of the phoniness, the contrived nature is just without fans.
And now,
it's just
now you
crazy.
Know what, you know, here's a couple things for you too, since we're on this. The U.S. Open starts today in New York.
I know.
No fans. And, you know, I mean, the fans love Serena and they love Federer. Federer and Rafa have stayed back home in Europe. They don't want to come because of the COVID. Serena's seated number three, but people are wondering, without the huge fan support she gets, can she win the women's championship at the U.S. Open? Yeah. And then yesterday, I know you two watched this. I did not, but it sounds wild, amazingly entertaining.
Oh,
those huge
putts.
Those huge putts. But there's no gallery to go nuts and jump around.
I really enjoyed the FedEx Cup playoffs. In fact, I almost got into a little, you know, the sports bubble, for lack of a better word, where it seemed like it was just real sports that I was actually watching. And then, yes, the four, it was probably a 40 footer that Dustin Johnson sunk on 18 to force the playoff. And then that wasn't just a 66 foot putt. Any 66 foot putt is amazing. This one broke twice. He hits it basically to his left. It goes down the hill, comes back to the right, then curves back in. It was remarkable. And yes, no noise, no.
It was at least 10 or 12 foot left of the pin where he was putting from. Oh, I could not easily believe the ball was going to travel that far, yep, at the end, but it comes straight down the hill, right, yeah, in the middle. What a moment.
It kind of, though, like Dustin's, if you watch it, Dustin's putt looked like it was going to miss. And the last 4 or 5 feet, yeah, of the hole, it just turned right in. And the same thing with Rom's. It was almost like there was a little shoot, you know, like a little slot car coming down the hill. But in any case, just.
Let me ask you a question. How good is Johnson playing? This is four tournaments, yeah, in a row. He was right there, mm, on the edge.
How good, you know, are so many playing?
And he's a good player. He's kind of a horse's ass, but he's a good player. He's
You're
always
just jealous because he has Paulina Gretzky. Stop it.
He's always, huh?
You're just jealous because Dustin has Paulina Gretzky.
Oh, I that's please. That's his GM. I have the greatest woman in the world.
Oh, you see that? Oh, yeah. Anyway, the whole sports scene is just and now we've got, okay. Let's talk about the Tigers a little bit. Okay, let's.
Well, I want to ask you guys a question though, because we do have some people out there who really are golf fans. I'm watching at a TV in a bar on Friday night. I look up, here's Tiger teeing off, and it says, "What? Would you repeat that? 8 over." But apparently, I mean, the leader was, I think Dustin was the leader at 1 under. What made that course so difficult? It's played like a U.S. Open course. Narrow. Why did they do that?
Very narrow fairways and very deep grass.
Once the ball goes off the fairway, it's tough. The fairways weren't that narrow. They gave you a chance to drive the ball. But if you looked at the putting in the green, you'd see 5 feet from the green would be grass that was 8 inches high. You just can't, yeah, hit the ball out of. So that's it. It's almost if an amateur that would play that course and get stuck in some of that rough could take 4 or 5 or 6 hacks to try and get out. But not just Dustin, he's been amazing. But look at this, even Joaquin, is it Nyman or Neiman? He's the Chilean guy. He is... He's 6 feet, 150 pounds. Apparently, he's a workout freak. But you just they're athletes now. Look at, yeah, John Rahm.
You don't see fat guys anymore out there.
No. Well, you got some chubby guys. You got your Shane Lowry.
Chubby's different than fat.
Well, you can also be chubby and very strong. And so
sure you can.
But they're all in good golf shape. Let's put it that way. But yeah. All right, we'll get back to all.
We'll talk about the Tigers. The Black Lives Matter thing canceled again Thursday. They had rain on Friday. They're playing two bastardized 7-inning games and doubleheaders, so on and so forth. I mean, it's almost slapstick. And here's the thing. Speaking of the Black Lives Matter movement that I thought was interesting. So, as you know, everybody across baseball this past weekend wore number 42 to honor the memory of the great Jackie Robinson. But Jackie, for whatever reason, was a conservative Republican. He voted for Nixon and supported him over Kennedy and so on and so
forth.
Why
is that relevant? Why is that relevant at all?
Well, I just wonder how Jackie Robinson would have felt about some of the excesses of the Black Lives Matter movement and canceling all these baseball games.
Well, okay. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a topic I want to talk about, but we've just veered from the Tigers onto that. I'm telling you, this is another thing that made me very depressed over the weekend. The guy that has now become the face of all the protests is really not a very good guy. I don't know Jacob Blake. I don't want to get to know Jacob Blake. But all I know is that when you're 29 years old and you have 6 children and no wives, and you are under with outstanding warrants for your arrest, yeah, when you're over there abusing a woman who had your children, when you steal her car,
that's true.
I just hate to see, and I support the whole purpose of Black Lives Matter, which is really about, it's called pretextual stops. It's about stopping a black guy like Brandon Marshall, who was worth $20 million, but they called the cops when he tried to move into his house in Miami last week because his name wasn't on some type of list and they called the cops. Or John Henson of the Bucks, who goes to buy a wedding ring and the woman won't let him in the store because why is a big black man trying to come into my jewelry store? It's these incidents that Cameron made Saban talked about, how he has to talk to his kid, you know, about you know, what to expect if he can, if he's confronted by the police. It's just goes on and on and on. And that's what happened. It's the Sandra Bland who died in prison. She was stopped because of a taillight was out, and she winds up dying in jail. But instead, I hate to see, and this is just how messed up the world is, this kid should not be the face of it right now. He's probably not a very good guy, and yet he didn't deserve to be paralyzed. He probably didn't deserve to get shot, but he was resisting arrest. He was not acting like a good citizen. So it's...
Now, I understand, man. I'll tell you this. And I'm not going to try to play devil's advocate, because I completely agree with you. When I was a boy growing up in Lily White, racist Grosse Pointe, Michigan, if you were a black person and you stepped into Grosse Pointe, you better be a maid, you better be a butler, or you're going to have some problems. Okay, fine. So there was zero crime. Now, you know, Grosse Pointe Park, where I actually grew up, voted for Barack Obama twice. So fortunately, anybody can move into Grosse Pointe now. Guess what's happened? I go back there, I hear the stories, crime in Grosse Pointe skyrocketed. Cars being stolen out of driveways, that's just a fact.
There's a crime. The crime is terrible right now. Police don't want to stop speeders. They don't want to respond to accidents. I got a very dear friend in the Chicago Police Force. He says, you know what we did? We just slowed our cars down. We're not chasing people anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's behind the window all the time now. Everybody's got a gun in the world right now. So you just can't say it's Grosse Pointe. The world is
that's not what I was trying to say.
But it's really unfair to just take one community and say that it's just full of crime. I agree.
And I don't totally want to talk about, and Bob, don't change this. And I understand what you're saying. Don't change the subject to black on black crime again and all that stuff. I want to give you something positive that's come out of this. Okay. Here's what's positive. And that is that at least black and white players in the NBA and Major League Baseball and others are unified on this, and it kind of surprised me. I want to tell you a story. When I worked with Gary Danielson for many years, probably maybe a total of 10 years, I don't know, but at least 7 on the locker room show. And he was saying he went to Dearborn Divine Child and never played, and never had a black teammate, never played against a black player, did not know, had no contact with black players. He said, I believe the stereotype growing up that the blacks have natural ability is why they're good, and the whites, like the Larry Bird syndrome, work harder to get where they are. That was the ugly stereotype, and that blacks weren't smart enough to play quarterback. There were no quarterback, middle linebackers. He said, I got to Purdue, and what I'd never been, now I got black teammates. He said, you know what blew me away? These guys busted their ass to get better. These guys worked their butts off, and I realized the reason they're good is because they work hard at it, which was against the stereotype. So here you have,
and they also have certain physical characteristics that are advantages. Come on, Eli. It's not just anybody working hard. Black guys jump out of the gym. Ever seen a white boy do that? They're so quick. The greatest sprinters in the world, all black. So come on, it's a mix of both things. And nobody's trying to say, and I don't remember anybody ever saying that black people don't work hard. Isaiah brought that up a few years ago, which I didn't
like. That was the sports stereotype. Right. That's what it was. So that's been encouraging, because when you're in a locker room with guys, and Denny, you know, you played with some black players, not a lot. You can tell the character of your teammates. You know who comes every day to play. You know who has heart. You know who has determination. You know who cares. And so that's what's made athletes well compared to the days of Jackie Robinson, where there was just raw hatred for anybody, for him and anybody else wanted to come in the league that wasn't white. Now I think in sports, players see their teammates and judge them on it. Just what Martin Luther King said, judge me on the content of my character, not the color of my skin. So that's been nice to me to see players come together in sports.
Yeah, and I'll add one thing with some of the black guys that I play with, and I'll just name a couple, Willie and Gates and Jake Wood. I always determined the guy who was committed to the game, how early he got to the ballpark, because they would always take, those types of guys would always take extra hitting, extra infield, extra outfield. And Gates and Willie, you wouldn't believe it, were two of the first guys in the clubhouse every day. It was amazing. And Jake was one of those guys too, but they've got great skills. The two guys I'm talking about, Gates and Willie, I mean, Willie couldn't run very well, but he could sure hit. And then, of course, Gates could run and hit and do everything else and eat hot dogs. Like, he ate hot dogs.
Of course, you're going to have black players and white players who are a little lazier than others, but it's not, you know, runs by color.
You you know, and the thing that's so disappointing about this is if you look at the three of us, for instance, personally, we've worked our entire adult lives, man, you know, to help end racism. Man, we all got black friends. We cover sports. We know a million. We get along great with them. Now we got a case on Sunday. I know you know this name if you haven't heard her, actually. Adele, the singer. She's a great singer. Sure. She goes to a picnic, and then she posts a photo of herself afterwards. She was clad in a bikini top, emblazoned with the Jamaican flag and Bantu knots. That's a hairstyle that's traditionally been worn by black women. And she was slammed by people. How dare a white girl like Adele try to use these black styles in public? It's sick, man.
That's one person. Easy boy. Well, calm down. Now you're doing it again.
Eli,
Bob, listen to me for one second.
Yeah, I got something else for you,
too.
The best
scenario you can point out about anybody in the public eye is 50% of the people like you and 50% don't.
The haters on social media.
Even Brandon took some heat on the last show. Eli, I got something for you, buddy, because you said this. You're trying to tell me, oh, this is just one person at one event. This actually has a name, and we're seeing it more and more. This is called cultural appropriation. Uh-huh. When you take something from somebody else's culture, oh my God, you can't do that. I'm sick of it, Bob.
Me too. That's BS political correctness that spills into every aspect of our lives, unfortunately. I want to talk about the Tigers, and I got some questions for Denny about Casey Mize. First, I want to remind you again that Dr. Yaldo is back at it, doing what he's done for 10,000 of Detroiters, giving them the best vision of their lives. And you guys see me on this show, you know what my vision is, because I got multifocal lens implants in 2018. I had cataracts at the time, and I just see everything beautifully, and I will for the rest of my life, the microscopic print and everything far away, because I have this amazing technology. It's for people over 45. If you're under 45, you're in good luck, because LASIK is one of the safest with the fewest side effects of any procedure in all of medicine. Get 20/20 vision far and near without ever needing to deal with those ugly, annoying contacts or glasses again. Get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or go to yaldoeyecenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you for our special discounts. Mention my name and you're in. And I want everybody in Michigan to remind you about Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. Buying a Lincoln, you get a great car, a luxury car, and you get buying and service elements that are unequaled with any other brand. And that's why Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln leads the field in exemplary family business. My friend, starting with Hoot, much older than me, but I did meet him back in the days when he was such a part of the sports scene. His sons, his grandsons all run the business, and it's a fabulous place. The entire team will take care of you, from business manager down to the last piece of customer service. I've gotten 6 cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership. Make an appointment. That's how easy it is. 248-354-4900. Get the treatment you want, the car you deserve, or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Now, Eli, before we get into the Tigers, why don't you tell everybody who's coming up later on the show today?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Very, very good get. Lorenzo White, the former Spartan and Houston Oiler. What an amazing. In fact, last night I watched 20 minutes of Spartan highlights, or Lorenzo highlights, trying to find some sound bites to put on the show today. Man, that dude, didn't they used to say, Bob, Lorenzo up the middle, Lorenzo left, Lorenzo right? Yeah. He did everything. He could catch passes, too. What an amazing player. And sure enough, he was, picked, I think, 22nd in the first round by Houston. But what we got to get into him with him is he is pissed to this day that he did not win the Heisman Trophy, finished fourth twice, losing to Bo Jackson. Awful running back, Bo Jackson. Not even in his, I'm just kidding. Not even Lorenzo's class. And who beat him out in 87? I'm trying to remember who won.
Well, Mike Rozier beat him out 1 year, and Tony Dorsett beat him out 1 year for the Heisman. Mm-hmm. And he had over 2,000 yards rushing, which we'll get into. But if you look at Lorenzo White, it's easy to say, well, this is one of the greatest players Michigan State ever had, which is true.
He was the greatest running back.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there was all the obviously records. Javon Ringer and Eric Allen, the Flea, and so many other people back there. But this guy's one of the greatest running backs, Eli, in the history of college football. The history of college football. Lorenzo White did.
He's not in the top 15 all-time in yardage gained, but he's still the Spartan leader and the first to gain 2,000 in a season. Oh, the 87 Heisman Trophy winner that beat him out, Tim Brown, Notre Dame, Don McPherson, give me a break, Syracuse, Gordy Lockbaum, Holy Cross.
There was the great wide hole. I remember him. Yeah. I remember him well. He was a hell of a small college player.
Yeah, and then he finished fourth there. And in 85, Bo, guess who finished second in 85 that also beat out Lorenzo? Iowa quarterback Chuck Long, good guy. But not nearly in Lorenzo's class, I don't think. Robbie Bosco finished third. That was the BYU quarterback. Yes. And then Lorenzo finished third. So we'll talk to Lorenzo White.
Yeah, and I go on for Denny, going way back to Eli's and my childhood football cards. The small college star. I think he was one of the college player of the year, played with the Chicago Bears, your beloved Bears.
Oh,
Harlan Hill.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Great. What a good player.
You're talking about Cosmo Iacovazzi. Who am I thinking of? Who was the... I can't think of him now. The great white running back from the 70s.
Well,
any case.
Well, there was Keith Elias at Princeton.
Yeah.
What school?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, you're losing it, aren't you? I'll get you some Prevagen.
Let's get to the Tigers now.
I think
what a turnaround. What an amazing turnaround.
What a turnaround.
They won 6 of 8. They're 500. Is it 5 in a row? I guess 5 in a row. They swept Minnesota.
Swept the Twins over the weekend. Yeah.
They're on the cusp.
Three straight really good ball clubs they've won the series from, and they're back at 500 now.
And get used to Minnesota. You know why? They play Minnesota 6 times. They play 6 times against Minnesota in the next 10 days.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing about this. What about this bastardized baseball stuff? You guys, this game will be final by the time you guys listening actually hear what I'm going to say. But on Monday afternoon, the Marlins are playing the Mets. This is Jacob DeGrom's fourth straight start against the Florida Marlins. Yankees and Mets are playing each other. I'd like to see some other teams. Tigers are playing Milwaukee, I guess, on Tuesday night. I'd like to see them play some other teams once in a while.
Well, I agree with that too, but here's the thing. It doesn't make any difference. It's a big league club, and there are big league players and everything else. And the interesting thing about it is the more times you would think that would be the opposite of what I'm going to say. The more times you pitch against a team, the better you get against that team. Contrary to what people would think, well, now you've seen a guy 3 times in a row. For the fourth time, we'll be ready to really whack attack him. That's not true, because the pitcher does get better over a period of time. And you know, let's talk about pitching for a minute. Casey Mize, he has no command of anything, anything.
Doesn't.
He's out there. He's scared. He's anxious. He doesn't know what to throw when it's a timely position to throw a certain pitch. He's trying, like I said the last time we talked, he's trying to set up breaking balls with another breaking ball, trying to set up a changeup with another changeup. That's not the way you pitch. And listen, the day before Scobel pitched, he threw 61 or 62% fastballs. All of a sudden, he got the message, because he did the same thing this first two starts, throwing one breaking ball after another. Listen, big league hitters still can't hit a good fastball. They can't hit it if it's in a relatively good position. And this kid, Casey, he just needs to go back to ground zero with somebody. I don't know who the hell is. Everybody on the bench blind to what this kid is doing? You know, he's throwing 60% breaking balls and changeups. That's not the way you pitch.
Well, the main thing is, another great right-handed American League pitcher besides you, Bert Blyleven, does the Minnesota Twins games. I usually listen to the Twins broadcasts. And Blyleven was screaming on Sunday. This kid's throwing nothing but splitters, and he can't get it over. He's throwing pitches behind guys at the plate. He's hitting guys during the game. So finally, Ricky Anderson comes out, and Blyleven said that was the message to him. Start using the fastball. And then Mize is throwing 96 and he starts to strike guys out. So I don't know what they're
going
to do.
Brandon,
go ahead.
Who's picking those pitches? I mean, isn't the catcher looking over to the dugout and they're saying,
that's a great question. And I was going to read a note about that today. Go ahead, Denny.
Yeah. I don't know if they're sending signals out. I think they're letting him pitch.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would be sending these sequence of pitches. There's just no way. You cannot get guys out throwing two and three changeups in a row or forkballs, whatever the hell you want to call them. And you know what? The more of those pitches he throws, whatever velocity he may have, and we don't know if he really has velocity, whatever velocity he has, he'll sooner or later, because he's throwing so many breaking balls, start short arm in the ball, and that'll take away a few more miles.
Can I give you a non-analytical in terms of baseball?
Of course you don't know anything about it anyway.
The problem is, he was the number one pick in the draft.
Right.
If he was a fourth round draft pick from 2014, he'd be a kid coming up. You know, we got to work some of this stuff out, but the expectations, because he was the number one pick, are outsized. That may be one of the reasons he's scared, because look what happens when you're the number one pick. And so we're analyzing him to a degree that we wouldn't other pitchers, because he's supposed to be great because they picked him. I could go back. I've done it in the past. I'm going to listen from Mike Drumright on down. There's probably 15 pitchers who were picked in the first round by the Tigers who weren't any good. Sure. It's a crapshoot. But I guess if you're number one, you're supposed to, and Verlander was number two in the draft, see how he turned out. It just doesn't always work that way in baseball.
But one thing that most of these guys have is a good, good fastball. You've never signed a kid because he had a good curveball in high school. Nobody has a good curveball in high school. Nobody has a great curveball in college. And he's been pitching to kids. That's what he's been pitching to. Listen, college baseball is not D-ball in the MLB system. College ball is somewhere south of minor, lousy baseball. They don't play the game well. They do never played the game well. Some organizations come up with a pretty good organization and a good plan. But you know what? Most colleges, they take what they can get. And they play pretty well. But, you know, don't confuse them with the minor league system, because they're not even close.
You're right. Well, by the way, Denny, they don't have D-ball anymore, but that's okay, because they used to have DC,
B, and A. I get it.
But your point is well taken, because everybody in A-ball in the rookie league was picked as the better college players. They're picked either from high school, as a senior high school, but they're picked from college as the guys that have the best chance to make it to the major league. So A-ball should be better than the colleges. He's pitched double A-ball before he got here. And listen, he may be great someday. I can't judge. Maybe it's coaching. Maybe it's relaxing. Maybe it's getting used to the game. Maybe it's growing up a little bit. But the problem with him, again, is because he's the number one pick, and we expect him to make the big leagues in his second year of organized ball be a star.
I did not expect this. I expected he to be in Toledo most of this year. That's where he would be.
That begs the question, should the Tigers keep throwing him out, or have we seen enough already to send him back down to Toledo?
Well, if Gardy is right about what he said after he pitched, he said, this kid has got too much stress and temperament on him right now. Yeah. It's a bad place for him to be. Yeah. But I got to just remind you one thing. Stress is the environment you live in the major leagues. That is the environment you live. That's what you have to put up with every time you go out there. So I don't know. Maybe they won't throw him out there. At least one thing. Throw him in the bullpen so he doesn't get embarrassed anymore. Enough is enough.
No.
So I want to say this, though. On Saturday, I really liked what I saw from Tarek Skubal. And I tuned in the Tigers broadcast to see what they're going to say. And Eli, the first guy I see on the Tigers broadcast, it's Jack! Jack, you're the Minnesota Twins broadcaster. It's like, Eli, you think about your career in Detroit. You're working on Channel 2. You do the 11 o'clock news. And the next night, you do the 6 and 11 on Channel 7. Why on earth would these competitive teams would allow this? I have no idea.
Why does it matter? He's gonna do it from a Tiger.
Because announcers are homers. That's why it matters.
He can be a homer for both. He's great.
You can't be a homer for both teams when they play each other. Who are you rooting for when they play each other?
When he does a Tiger telecast, he's a homer.
He roots for them.
I give Jack credit. Now,
but who does he pull for this past weekend? Minnesota or the Tigers?
He pulled for the Tigers. This is okay.
He actually did. That's the one game I saw.
In fact, if you don't think he pulled for the Tigers, was it the Scope home run or was it the Candy home run where Jack pipes in? I think it's a Scope home run. Why don't you play that from yesterday, Brandon? I think Jack has something to say with that. Go ahead. You'll see who he pulled for.
The 2-1 hammered to left.
Stay fair.
And that ball's gone. A home run for Jonathan Scope. He turned on that baby, and it's 3-2 Tigers.
You see, Jack said, stay fair. He did his job. He's rooting for the Tigers.
I'm going to send that broadcaster some of my Zoloft.
as for the other broadcaster with him, because we always like to have a little fun with Shep, he says during the game, I'm quoting, "We'll see Mize on the mound tomorrow. He and Scooble just more and more and more comfortable every time they take the mound at the major league level." They are, really.
You know, he called Jamer Candelario streak unbelievable. He called, okay, well, here's this. So the Shep call of the day had to do with Miguel Cabrera. It's actually a single, not a home run. When Miguel Cabrera got his 2,000th hit, he was at 199. And
he pronounced him dead 3 weeks ago. Then he said, he's done. Get him out of here.
This is how it sounded. Cabrera.
Oh, you pronounced Miguel Cabrera dead.
He is dead.
How's he looking now?
He's up to 241. He had a nice weekend. Here we go. Ready? Here's this with his 2,000th hit as a Tiger. Go ahead, Brandon.
Sitting on a 2-0. On the ground. There it is. His 2,000th career hit as a Tiger, joining that exclusive club. And it brings in Reyes for the first run of the day.
Called it a magical mark. And this, you know, the word I hate the most in sports is unbelievable. And I was going to play a Shep unbelievable. But then again, when that 66-foot putt went in by John Rahm, Dan Hicks said it, called it unbelievable. I said, you know, that's close to unbelievable. But in any case, the people that he's up there with who are the eight on the list now of the Tigers? Cobb, Kaline, Heilman, Crawford, Gehringer, Lou Tram, and Cabrera all have 2,000 hits.
So, you know, there's been so much jumping on Cabrera, and I understand that, and I understand what Denny was saying too. Lynn Henning wrote a piece in the Detroit News, he tweeted it out, I guess, and he said a couple of weeks ago, he says, here's what they need to do with Cabrera. Keep him on the ball club this year. Let him get to 500 home runs. I'm thinking, what? He needs 19 home runs to get there. You think he's going to hit 19? Then Henning says, just send him home after that. Thank him for his service. Give him a day and just pay him his contract to sit around. I don't know. I think he's good with the kids, too. Those Latino kids idolize him.
Yeah,
I agree. I think I'd keep Miguel Cabrera around.
And by the way, if you saw the game yesterday, it's pretty funny when they put it on the scoreboard, congratulations to 2,000. He gets out of the dugout. And
yeah,
it
was very funny.
It was very, very cute.
That was great.
Yeah, really cool. And apparently those guys listen to the show, too, because I've been begging them to start using Gregory Soto as their closer. Lo and behold, that's exactly what they're doing now. He closed out on Saturday as the Tigers swept 2. And then, of course, we've been talking about what happened to Casey Mize on Sunday. I want to say something else. So you saw Victor Reyes lead off that game with a triple, and he'd gone 4-for-4 in the other one. So we rip Al Avila all the time, and so does everybody else. Who found those guys? This other guy, Jose Cisnero, he is a Rule 5 choice, the Tigers first. So, I mean, Al Avila's done some pretty good things here, too. And as I've said, let's wait.
And how about the Candelario trade?
You just have to wait.
Candelario was red hot. You know what that means?
Yeah.
It means that Shep is going to jump out of his seat. And here he is again from yesterday.
Candelario's worked it full. Sends one to deep right. Back goes Kepler. And that's gone. Candelario does it again. And we are tied at 2. A 5-game hitting streak for Candelario. Includes his 4th home run of the year.
Unbelievable. 4 home runs and a 5-game winning streak, Mike.
I mean, it's really over the top. I saw a tweet from Mario Impemba. In fact, it was with Freddie the Pizza Man, who's been on the show before, too. and it was just, they were sitting around having a piece of pizza at Freddie's place downriver. And I wrote him back and said, Mario, it's ridiculous. Why isn't this guy on the air broadcasting games someplace? He's a good, very, I'd rather have him than Shep, needless to say. He's a good nuts and bolts guy. Is he now banned from baseball for life?
I think he did some radio with the Red Sox last year when.
I know that, and they didn't bring him back for whatever reason.
Yeah, because Dombrowski, though. Now, before Bob reads a couple commercials here in a moment, I talked about the word unbelievable that I hate, but here's one, and Jim Price says this a lot, And frankly, it.
Are you going to talk about his arsenal of diction?
No. This is one. The guy hits a homer, and Jack does it too. And he says, "And he didn't miss it."
Oh.
What the hell does that mean? He hit it. Yes, he didn't miss it. He hit it, and he didn't miss it. Oh, God.
Well, you guys are tough today, aren't you?
Yeah.
I also want to mention, I thought Tyler Alexander did an excellent job Sunday in relief of Mize. Who brought that guy in? That guy would be Al Avila
His
people. Hey. And Dick Bremer, the longtime Minnesota play-by-play guy, said at the end of Sunday's game, and I'm quoting here, the Detroit Tigers should be talked about as one of the surprise success stories in baseball this year.
Right. Let me tell you my impressions of the Detroit Tigers. 30 seconds. They do not look like a team. It looks like we're picking guys out of the air to play today, to play tomorrow, to play next week. The team concept is not there yet.
Hmm.
It's not like the 84 Tigers or the later clubs. That's just not
there. It's a game of individual talent, Denny. I'm telling you,
it's independent of independence. And it just doesn't hit me as a team yet. Maybe you know what, next year, maybe we'll see a nice blend, but I don't see the blend yet. And we got a lot of hitters, by the way, hitting out of order right now. There are certain hitters, good hitters on a team that should be protected by other hitters who are capable of doing that. And I think, like I said the other day, I love Gardy. I think he's a hell of a guy. But right now, I think with all these young kids, he may be the wrong guy to manage. Bring on Lance Parrish.
They're missing CJ Cohn. These kids don't even know each other. And when Casey Mize was talking to the media on Sunday afterwards, he said, the thing about it is I don't want to let these guys down because we got a great group of players here on this ball.
Hey, boys, here's what
I think it's a team.
The stretch drive is on our hand. Right now, it's the stretch drive after 32 games. This is the September stretch drive. And the Tigers, off 114 losses last year, have a shot at the title. This is the season for do it. Deuces and jokers and one-eyed jacks are wild. That's what baseball is. And look what the Tigers are doing.
Now here's the thing, fellas. Here's a huge story that we have not mentioned yet. And again, it's one of those things that people are going to understand what's happened, because this is going to occur after we record the program Monday morning. We'll see how good a team this is by 4 o'clock Monday afternoon, when Al Avila at the trade deadline for Major League Baseball has an option. He can trade Scope. He can trade Romine. He can get more draft picks, suspects. Or does he say, I think this club can win. We're not doing anything.
He could trade Matt Boyd, but we'll see.
Can't win with this team. You can't win the championship. You can't get there. But what you can do is trade for a good pitcher, one or two guys out there who are, maybe in the middle of late of their careers that have still got some.
Who are you giving up? Okay, that's fine. Who are you giving up?
That's what they need. They need some pitching. We do not have pitching yet. We don't have anything consistent.
Okay. Back
who do you want to trade, Danny, to get that pitching?
What's that?
Who do you want to trade to get that pitching?
Well, I think Boyd is a good candidate.
He pitched Friday night, but I don't know what value
he has. Hoping that Cabrera was going to get off to a good start and we would dump him someplace.
He's gotten
off to such a bad start, nobody's even going to return the phone call.
If he'd started hitting a little bit earlier, they could have maybe paid some of the salary.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, I guess it's time for me to take the reins here, boys, because I do want to tell you again about Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. He's a longstanding Red Shovel Network supporter of Drew Lane's, and he served many of our listeners very well by creating financial plans, business plans, and trust for them, whether it's planning for future family obligations or your own retirement. Why not let Luke develop a comprehensive plan for you? He's got decades of experience, track record of success in creating custom solutions for businesses and individuals. If you call him, here's the number, 248-663-4748. He's going to set up a complimentary consultation. You sit down, ask him any questions you want, and then you'll let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. Ethical, knowledgeable, caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. And again, you call 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through a Royal Alliance associate. You never did make it clear what I was supposed to say there, Eli. But I also, continuing on, I want to tell you that interest rates, I have to tell you this because they're at dramatic record lows. And that should encourage almost anybody to take advantage of it before it's too late. Is it time to refinance your home or condo? You can't do better than with David Hall Mortgage. David's been a part of the greater Detroit community for over 30 years. Built his business, maintained his leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering you better options and more personal attention. Hall Financial also provides the fastest service in the business, generally just three or fewer weeks. And all this has enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. So go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started, or just call them 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
And let me just tag the last segment, Bob. You made the point about Al Avila, and we're guilty of something that fans and sports reporters do, and that is, I've said it many, many times, we take short-term results and make long-term prognostications. And so it was very easy to rip Al Avila for some of the things that seemed seemingly bad, and at this point we have to say, done a pretty good job, at least for how things are looking currently. So in the beginning of the show, and by the way, thank you guys for pulling me up a little bit out of my depression. I just said, how am I even going to do this show today? The sports world and the world in general is bothering me so much. And then everything so uncertain and nothing to plan, and people change their minds every day, and scientists don't know about COVID. Some do, some don't. We believe some, we don't believe others. Now the Big Ten actually might play football again. This story has emerged in the last two or three days.
I told you. I said it wasn't over yet.
It's stunning. I accept football players' determination to play, as I respect students' desire to attend classes. I'm just thankful I haven't had any of these decisions to make. But I know how it can happen, and happen reasonably safely, but I don't think they'll do that. And that is, okay, let's do the story first. Eight players from Nebraska filed a lawsuit to say that the Big Ten didn't hold a vote to actually do this. And then Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, says they did in fact hold a vote and decided to postpone the season. And he said it will not be revisited. Well, now they're revisiting it. The problem is that presidents and chancellors have so many other issues besides football. Football's got $187 million budget at Michigan. The hospital has $5 billion. So they got so many issues to deal with beyond football. But, you know, I think players, if they want to play, ought to be able to play. Some can opt out if they want to. The serious ones will play. And here's how you do it. Finally admit, as we have been getting close to that over the years, that they're not really student athletes. Create the bubble like they've done in the NBA and the NHL that works. Put them
That's
in a team
not
hotel.
Happen,
put them
please.
In a team. Listen, all the kids on campus are doing remote, they're doing online crap anyway.
They're not football players.
Give them tutors in the hotel. Give them to and go through all the testing. And as Nick Saban got it right. He said they're not going to get COVID playing football. They're going to get it by being on campus.
Eli, what does a 21-year-old kid want to do much more than playing football or anything?
Get laid.
Go out. Yeah, you better believe it. You better believe it. So you're telling these kids, you know that hot little girl back in college you've been seeing? You ain't going to see her for the next 3.5 months. You're in the bubble, buddy. Come on.
Well, she can come.
It would
never
work. Well,
Eli, here's the problem with it. Most of the colleges around the country right now are having surges of the virus, like right. At Notre Dame. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids have come back.
Alabama,
now they've
yeah.
chased everybody home again. And a lot of the colleges have chased people home. We all know one thing. The kids who want to play football, they want to play football because most of them want to display their abilities
yes.
for the NFL. But I got news for you. The NFL already has most of these guys with the talent somewhere on their list of who could be good, who can be not necessarily good. So they don't displaying and going out there and demonstrating that you're a great athlete. They don't need to do that anymore. People have seen them. They, you know what? And there's hours and hours
but Denny,
of video
come on now.
That they can refer to.
But they're kids. And from one season to the next, they could be a completely different player. So,
sure.
so they need to display their talents. They want to display their talents. Now, you're right. The guy from LSU, Chase is his name, right? The incredible wide receiver. What's his first name? Yeah. Is it Jamar?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, Jamar
we know who
Chase.
You're talking about.
Yeah, Jamar Chase, top receiver in college football, the biggest name to opt out. Why? Because he wants to go to the draft. He has every right to do that. So, you know, the kids.
That's a double-edged sword now, since you mentioned that, as a natural segue to this. Leonard Fournette, one of the greatest running backs in LSU history. They just drafted him 3 years ago in the fourth pick of the first round. Jacksonville did. And they cut him yesterday. So these guys all have these pie-in-the-sky dreams. Yeah, I want to play football because I'm going to the NFL.
Well,
son,
you
you're probably not.
You can't deny them. You can't deny them those
no,
dreams. But
no.
this is the great shaking out. Players who are more so students and maybe they got the scholarship so they can get an education, don't have to play football. Those who want to display their talents more can stay and play in January, whenever they start this thing. Barry Alvarez says it could start as early as Thanksgiving if they get the presidents and chancellors to vote on it and allow them to play. They can do that. And others like Jamar Chase can opt for the NFL. So, but
you know, we had a lot of interesting stories.
The bubble would work.
That we could have led with today, this, of course, being one of them. But, I mean, it's always, when a larger-than-life figure dies, it's always shocking and surprising. And so it was that we all read about John Thompson passing away this morning, the longtime head basketball coach at Georgetown University. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of thoughts about John Thompson. You guys want to go first?
Go ahead.
Well, he was the first one.
Okay, I'll go first.
He was the first black coach.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. What do you got?
Just saying, he's the first black coach to win an NCAA tournament. He played for Red Auerbach as a player. He's a backup to Bill Russell. And he's the guy that took Allen Iverson out of high school and a troubled kid and guided him a little bit. So, you know, I think overall Thompson has a deservedly good reputation.
And maybe not. I covered the Big East Conference for many, many years. I've met John two or three times. Nice man, actually, when you meet him. But John Thompson was the head coach at one of the elite academic institutions in the country. And he prostituted Georgetown's mission to take kids like Allen Iverson and these other guys in. And if you dared to write anything about him or say anything on the air about Georgetown and what they were doing, you were a racist. They dropped the race card more than anybody I've ever seen when they communicated. Because our nickname for Georgetown was always Hoya Paranoia. You couldn't get a lick of information out of those guys. There was this big steel wall. You know, it was uncomfortable is what it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I have mixed feelings about John Thompson.
Bob, you used the word prostituted. In what sense?
In what sense, as I said, Georgetown's one of the elite universities in America, if not the entire world. You want to go? I'd say you better have a 4.0. You better have 14.
But that's the same
16.
As every other school.
But Georgetown's a cut above it,
oh,
Eli.
Stop that crap.
No,
when you're
you
Duke,
stop.
That's your
no,
Dukey
Georgetown's
BS.
A way cut above that. And that's then, how they prostituted their mission.
Well, they want to win at basketball. That's a decision made
that's
above John Thompson.
Do.
That's yeah. a decision made above John Thompson. He yeah, was the one who implemented it.
Yeah, and maybe at one time that was true. It's no longer true. The colleges are the colleges as what they are today. They're all playing for the same thing, whether it's playing on or off the field. It's all level at this point in time. Just talent separates the good from the bad.
Ivy League is probably an exception to that. Maybe Northwestern. You're right, Denny. There are some exceptions to it, I think. But yeah, it's minor league sports. We know that.
Thompson was 78. Cliff Robinson died at 53. Now,
God, hard to
he wasn't with the Pistons when I was there. I covered Robinson as a Blazer, and stunningly, three guys from the team that the Pistons beat on Vinnie Johnson's 007 shot in 1990 when they defeated the Blazers in five games to win back-to-back championships. Cliffy died.
Jim Calhoun says that Cliff Robinson was their first great player at UConn. That turned that entire program around. He said the quote was, you know, Cliff came from a very difficult background in Buffalo, but I watched him evolve as a man. Cliff Robinson was a good man. He had a great career, instrumental in a lot of great things that happened at Connecticut. He had a ton of health issues starting in 2017. And as we do this, they still haven't revealed the cause of death, but 53.
Yeah, wow, I thought it was lymphoma.
Yeah, lymphoma.
Oh, they have announced it now?
Yeah,
lymphoma. Okay, I didn't see it.
And he played 18 years in the NBA. He was a second-year man back in 1990 when the Pistons played the Blazers. And a good guy, one of the original so-called stretch forwards.
That's a good point.
The 6'10 guy that could shoot from the outside, you know, kind of a later on Bob Lanier who might have been Bob wasn't fast enough to be a stretch forward, but in any case,
And then you mentioned Lute Olson right there dying, the longtime Arizona coach. Did you mention Lute?
Yeah, no, but that was 85. That was last week's show. I think you mentioned last week.
No, we didn't get it in time. He was 85 years old, and if you read the obits with quotes from his former players at Arizona, they thought he was God. They thought he was the greatest guy they'd ever met, greatest coach ever. It was amazing how flattering these comments were. And you want to talk again about taking kids who shouldn't be in college? This is Arizona. Come on, Arizona State is much worse than that even. It doesn't really matter. But to me, Georgetown's different.
that's to you. It's different. It's just another school in the Big East. And if they got some kids who are great students, that's fine. It doesn't have to carry over to the basketball
team. And, you know, right now, Georgetown students are they're doing their schoolwork on the same internet online classes as your local community college. So I don't see anything special about them.
About Georgetown, did you apply when you came out of high school?
My point
you
is,
accepted, were you?
Bob Page, my point is that right now, what the heck, what kind of academics are they doing? They're logging onto their computers and they're, you know, they're doing everything
Well, Brandon, that's a
online.
Temporary situation here. I mean, it's not indicative of Georgetown not being an excellent
And they're
university.
Paying 10 times the amount of any other college that's doing the exact same curriculum.
Well, that's a different matter.
Right. Yeah. I feel so bad for these kids, Mike. God. So, let's do this day in sports, right? Because we got Lorenzo White coming up in about seven or eight minutes.
You know what? I got this just
You've always
you,
got five things you don't get to, and then I give you one, then you go to another one. What is it?
Quiet.
Don't you have some spots to take care of?
So long, everybody, on WCWA. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
To the No Filter Sports Podcast. You haven't listened to the No Filter
Come
Sports
back.
Podcast.
Listen to the rest of the show.
1905, Tiger Ty Cobb makes his debut. Isn't that something? Doubling off Jack Chesbro. 1937, Joe Louis wins the heavyweight title, beating Tommy Farr. I wrote this down because Kirby Puckett went 6-for-6 with two homers in 87, but the record for hits in a 9-inning game is 7. Rennie Stennett got that with the Cubs, Pirates against the Cubs in 75, which he then turned into a 4-year, $2.4 million free agent contract that he could never live up to. And, of course, you know, the two Tigers had 7 hits in a game. 7 hits is the
record. Coco Gutierrez was one of them. I remember
that. And Rocky Colavito had 7. He went 7-for-10, but that was a 22-inning game. But yes, Cesar Gutierrez went 7-for-7. Curtis Strange in 87 set golf's record for winnings in a year at $697,000. That's now about a third of a single tournament win. That's how much that's gone up.
If I may interject, Jamie Ariadne, I think everybody knows who that is, the longtime sports writer. When that kid from Penn State, what was his last name, Brandon Curtis, the great running back, I think he might have been Heisman Trophy winner at Penn State. And he's just the weirdest guy ever. So Jay started referring to him in the paper as Curtis Strange. That's all he ever called him, Curtis Strange.
Kurt Warner. No, not Kurt Warner.
No, the running back.
I can't think of his last name.
Okay, whatever.
Right. First Japanese-born player made it to the major leagues in 64. I remember that one happened in Masanori Murakami. We always said the Japanese baseball was inferior, but here a guy came over. That was kind of a big move. And do you remember in 1984, Jerry Rice was his biggest receiver, Willie Totten, passed for 536 yards and 9 touchdowns in an 86-0 win over Kentucky State. Rice had 17 catches for 300 yards in the game. 2004, sexual assault charge against Kobe Bryant dropped by the Eagle County District's office in Colorado. And on this day last year, just last year,
they settled away. Kobe paid her millions, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he did.
It was dropped on this day. Yes, he did. And Justin Verlander struck out 14 in his third career no-hitter just a year ago. Who could have predicted where we'd be 1 year later in Major League Baseball?
Okay, now, if that's it, I got this one that I want to read. We don't do shows on the weekend, as you guys know. So this is This Day in Sports from August 29th, not the 31st, as it is as we record this program. So on that day in sports, August 29th, 1966, an MLB starter's pitching line read 229 pitches thrown, 8 hits, walked 9, but he also struck out 11. Danny McClain beat the Baltimore Orioles for a 16th win of the season. Threw 229 pitches in one game.
Denny, who was the manager? Was it Stump? No, who was the fill-in manager that day? A guy you did not like
either,
at all.
It was either Frank Scaff or Bob Swift, the catcher.
No, there wasn't a guy named...
Well, let me thank Jay.
Stubby.
All right, yeah. Stubby. I don't remember.
Yeah. I want to thank listener James Harris for sending that in. Now,
when was that? 66?
66, yeah.
Boy, I remember it to be my third game I ever pitched in the big leagues.
That's in the book.
My memory
because,
is going to hell.
That's in the book. 229 pitches.
We had another discussion
9 walks
last night.
I don't walk 9 guys in 2 months.
You did in that game.
Yeah, apparently I did. I must have been scared.
You did in that game.
Hard to throw 229 pitches. You better walk a few guys. Yeah, otherwise, you're not going to last very long. Go ahead.
Here's another note about this from the conversation I had last night. You look at Flat Rock, Michigan, downriver Detroit. If you're from Michigan, you know where that is.
Fred Gladding.
Very good. First name you came up with. So did you know this? Fred Gladding compiled a record of 26-11 at a 2.70 earned run average in 7 years with the Detroit Tigers, 217 games. And Gladding's 703 winning percentage with Detroit is the highest in the franchise's entire history for a pitcher appearing in at least 200 games.
He also has the major league record for farts in one day. He was my roommate for 3 years, and all he did was drink beer and fart. I'm not talking once or twice a day. I'm talking like a machine gun. I mean, and then they just keep coming and coming and coming. And he
didn't want to hear where. What did you do about it?
He would do it at breakfast. Listen, he'd do it at breakfast, lunch, dinner at the ballpark. The guy, I don't know. It was crazy. And I'd say, and he smoked too. And I said, geez, the way you're farting, you're going to blow up this room, for God's sake, with all this gas coming out of you.
By the way, I was right. Kurt Warner is the running back at Penn State.
Kurt Warner's the quarterback.
Kurt Warner is an American former professional football running back. Two-time All-American at Penn State.
Yeah.
Warner drafted by the Hawks in the first. So was the quarterback Kurt Warner also? It's Kurt Warner, right?
K-U-R-T. Kurt Warner. This was C-U-R-T with the running back.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to the mailbag in a moment. But first, I want to remind you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They've got five locations selling just Chevys. Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, Highland. They sell used cars, too, there. In fact, they do have Michigan's top-rated pre-owned super center for used cars. No pre-owned cars, obviously, in Waterford. And it simply is 1-800-PRE-OWNED. Buy a fully inspected, guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman. You get their exclusive. Drive it for 3 days. Love it or bring it back guarantee. What better could you hope for with a pre-owned car? It's a can't-lose proposition, and there's one more thing on top of it. With their exclusive guaranteed credit approval, you'll get approved to buy the pre-owned car that you can bring back in 3 days if you don't like it. We're proud and confident you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. There's also Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Key of Novi, Feldman Dodge Jeep and Ram of Woodhaven. We're proud that you can find what you want there at one of those 9. Let them earn your business and still at the same time support No Filter Sports. Buy online also at FeldmanAuto.com. It's hassle-free at home or in the showroom. We also encourage you, consider Power Home Solar if you're thinking at all about saving money on energy bills, about not having to deal with power outages. Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company, and all their panels are made in America. And having teamed with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you will never have to fear an outage in your house again with a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Owner Jason Waller is offering financing at $99 a month. Call him at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $1,800. Support our guys like Power Home Solar, and they'll continue to support us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast, and let's go with the mailbag.
And as always, we tell you how you can tweet us, though I cannot guarantee either Mr. Zarrett or Mr. McLean will respond to your tweet personally. But it's at Eli Zarrett, at MUTrudeni, or at Bob Page Sports, and I will respond to it. So I got to start. Look, I know he's on the show a lot, but I got to start with this blurb from Jimmy Lyons today. He says, I'm very proud of Eli. He's now a mailbag fan. Could this really be true? No. Eli, you know that us mailbaggers only write because you, Bob, and Denny consistently put together great shows week after week. But you're showing me a different side all of a sudden. Let me guess. Are you using a different strain of marijuana now? No comment, huh? All right. Now to our show with Stu Grimson, the Grim Reaper. So I think so many of you enjoyed that. Gasper Genovese is with us again. He says, I'm not a big hockey fan, and I was about to tune out the show when Grimson came on. I'm glad I didn't. I found it fascinating that being an enforcer entails as much planning and strategy as brute force. I'm going to buy his book. Also want to thank you guys for the honest conversation on BLM, the pandemic, sportscasters' careers being ruined because of a non-PC slip-up. You guys verbalize what people are thinking. If most people were as open and honest as you three guys, our society would be a lot less dysfunctional than it is today.
Those are the ones that like us. Of course, there's 10,000 others that don't listen to us anymore because they don't like what we say, but I appreciate all the compliments.
Very nice. David Foster, Detroit native and an attorney working in Indianapolis and living there now, says, Bob just got caught up with the podcast. Great interview with the Grim Reaper. Amazing how articulate and thoughtful he is. His ability to flip the psycho switch was incredible. And for sure, the Probert documentary is a must watch.
Yep.
I wanted to mention that Keith Starr of Oak Park, Michigan, was moved in the wake of the interview we did with Grimson to write us about another tough guy, a friend of his, and a guy Eli and I have both known for a long, long time, and that's Mike Hartman. He was not a heavyweight fighter. He was a middleweight guy, one of the few Jewish players in the NHL at the time. Great guy, and I guess Mike's doing well and has his own podcast out there somewhere right now as well.
Pretty and he cool. is a fellow member of the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame.
Yes, he is.
Yours truly, Mike and I. Go ahead, Bob.
You both deserve to be there. And finally, I have this note on the show as well. Let me read this. Thanks, fellas, with two exclamation points. I had a great time. Ask me back anytime. Signed, Stu Grimson.
Very nice.
You know, I would have never imagined that Stu was, well, I actually said before we talked to him, I saw him in the Probert movie, and I go, all these enforcers, they're just so well-spoken. It made me realize that what we see on the ice doesn't necessarily reflect who they are in real life. And Grimson was a great example of that. A lawyer now, college graduate, and yet, as we showed in the interview, and played some stuff, an absolute lunatic when he played that role. So, you know, kind of the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of thing. But I'm glad to hear that.
I don't think I've seen this name before. Demetrius Spoukas. It's a Greek name. Spoukas, I guess, is how you must pronounce it. And he writes to us, hi, guys. I ran across this article on sportsillustrated.com entitled Burgess Owens Will Not Stand for Colin Kaepernick's Kneeling. It was written in June of 2020. And this, of course, you all know who Burgess Owens was. He was a great NFL player, a defensive back with the Redskins. But he has his opinion on Kaepernick, and he doesn't like what Kaepernick did. It's been implied on the show, and he is black, of course. Been implied on the show that most people are on the same page concerning this issue. I agree with Bob. Politics and sports turns a lot of fans off. And there have been some rumblings, fellas.
Everyone is entitled to their opinion.
Yep,
that's right. Quite true. It's very difficult at this point in time in our history to separate the two. They're on top of each other right now.
Yeah. Here's a police detective who also teaches criminal justice at a junior college. Doesn't say where, nor does he want his name used. He writes in to say, a Washington Post database shows that 14 black and 25 white unarmed Americans were shot dead by the police in 2019. While an officer-involved shooting is tragic, out of the millions of citizen contacts yearly with the police, I would hardly declare this is an epidemic now. Of the 1,000 citizens shot by the police, 90% of those incidents, the citizens were armed.
Can I interrupt you?
You're interrupting him.
This all I want to say is to reprise what we said earlier before we get into this opinion, and he's entitled to his opinion. It isn't just the deaths. It's the daily pretextualizing that I said, where black people get profiled and stopped and questioned, the stop and frisk and all that stuff. Yeah. Many, many more are put in jail for petty offenses and stuff like that. So let's not get in. And I said, too, I support BLM, but I thought that this guy, Jacob Blake, is not ideal.
Well, he mentions him, of course, Eli, and he talks about the circumstances of what happened in Kenosha. And he says, of course, shots should not have been fired. But do they watch this guy just get in his car and drive away with kids in it? At some point, Jacob Blake bears some responsibility, his words.
Well, the bottom line is he had two warrants out for him, and he looks like he was trying to escape. I mean,
he should have.
I agree. You don't shoot him. But, geez, I mean, three cops, you can't put them down on the ground somehow? What nobody understands.
Would we have done that? Would Denny, Eli, or Bob have resisted arrest, fought with cops who had guns, walked away with guns drawn on us? So these are extreme examples.
Yeah. So now we'll follow that up with Mike, who is a retired, I think, police officer in Naperville, Michigan.
Do we gotta keep on doing this stuff? Okay.
Well, I mean, this is a good...
Can we talk about the one with Dickerson and Price? Can't we talk about...
Okay, we can do that too. But anyway, he wanted to take issue with you, Eli, as a law enforcement officer, he says, of the past 32 years. He says, calling the officers, quote, incompetent, terrified, ill-equipped, and, quote, doing, quote, the wrong thing is not only insulting, but it's just plain ignorant. Come out and ride in a police car sometime.
It may be.
See what these guys go through and how I would they do risk that. Their lives.
And I think I prefaced that by saying I wasn't there and I don't know. And being a cop has got to be a very, in most cases, tough, thankless, dangerous job.
They killed a cop in St. Louis Sunday
night. For low
pay.
For low pay, too. Thank God that people are willing to do this. And we know that most cops are good. I'm not even I want to talk about good or bad cops. It's the profiling. It's
right.
The fact that if you're black in America, you think people are watching you and they're scared of you. Stokely Carmichael said that 50 years ago, and he's right. We gave examples last show of, well, even no matter how we think about things, we still make assumptions about people. And
yeah, I think I was trying to say St. Louis, but it was in Portland. There was a police officer murdered in Portland Sunday night. It happened to be black, 33 years old, a wife and three little kids at home. It's a tough, dangerous job.
The violence has to stop. The violence is inappropriate in any case.
Here's to here's
how
Dave,
depressing.
Here's Dave.
Why did you got to get into this? I thought we got
so
it.
Uplifted.
I felt good in the beginning of the. You guys helped me up in the beginning of the show. And
you're all right, Booby. I'll send you a pill.
Jeez. These guys are talking about your depression medication. My depression medication. Go ahead.
I'm going to give you a mush softball to hit out of the park. Make you feel better, Eli. Dave Hoffman writes in. I'd like to offer some praise for the oft-maligned Jim Price. He and Dan Dickerson are about the only hometown broadcast team in pro or college sports that'll actually tell you when their home team is underachieving, and they'll tell you when a bad umpire call goes in favor of their team,
right,
which gives them a lot of credibility. You don't hear that from a lot of other local broadcast teams, says Mr. Hoffman.
And you know what? Well, Jim Price also says he didn't miss it. He didn't miss it.
Well, here too.
He did not miss that pitch. Go ahead.
Jeez. Questioning a call from the press box is very, very difficult, whether you've got monitors or not. And, you know, it's just a part of the daily BS that they have to go through, promoting the team and doing what they need to do to, well, this year we're not even selling tickets, but they're still getting that TV money, and that makes everything okay.
Yeah. How about that? And finally, we'll close the mailbag segment.
Is the third time you said finally?
Right?
How many times have you said finally? Didn't you say
no,
finally?
No, it's the first time I've said finally on this one.
Finally.
So at any rate, this comes via Twitter from PMH. That's what he goes by. And he writes, Robert, my good man, you're the only voice of sanity on the show. Go enjoy your retirement now. Denny is severely off. Eli has smokes himself dumb. And Brandon is just as bad. It's a tough audience out there. And Brandon flips the bird. I didn't say that, Brandon.
Actually, but maybe you should do that show alone. That way you won't have any interference. Just do it alone.
I couldn't do it without Brandon.
Let's
without you guys.
Instead of doing it alone, let's have someone join us. How about Lorenzo White, the former Spartan great? Lorenzo White, you know, I watched about 20 minutes of Lorenzo on YouTube last night. Was reminded of what made him a two-time All-American, Spartans all-time leading rusher in yards per game, rushing touchdowns. The records don't stop coming, and they still stand. He was the Big Ten's first rush for 2,000 in a season, which he did as a sophomore, not to mention the 8 years he played in the NFL. Speed, elusiveness, power. At State, it was 4 years of Lorenzo left, Lorenzo right, or Lorenzo up the middle.
White breaks a tackle, spinning free. Hits the first down, cuts back. What a beautiful run.
Is he something?
Man in motion. Ball is given on that misdirection again to Lorenzo White. Breaks it big. He may be gone. Ball at the 10. Need 4. White's got it. Gets a big hole. Sealed blocking. Beautiful blocking by Michigan State. Touchdown, Spartans.
And Lorenzo joins us now from his hometown of Fort Lauderdale. Lorenzo, thanks for giving us some time. Your time. 25 years since you retired in 95. 2,000 rushing attempts pro in college, almost 10,000 yards rushing. How are you holding up physically 25 years since you last carried the ball?
I'm still putting one foot in front of the other.
With or without a walker?
I, you know what? Sometimes, every now and then, I might need a little help.
Have you had any joints replaced? You had any shoulders, knees, everything still the original?
You know, knock on wood. none of that, just lower back and hamstrings, because that was one of the major things that I messed up was my hamstring.
When you left the game, all of this stuff about head injuries became so unbelievable. Did you join the class action lawsuit or anything?
Well, yeah, you got to, because, you know, losing and, you know, with so many hits to the head, you don't always remember everything.
Yeah. You're still a relatively young man. Were you, you're 50, 54 now? Is that what you
were? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I got underwear twice as old.
Oh, stop.
Hey, Renzo, you know, as you know, it's a very typical thing for great high school football players in Michigan to come down to either Michigan or Michigan State. That's what you came down to. And you're from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So tell us about the whole recruitment process. Tell us about the trip with Michael Irvin you took to East Lansing. Go ahead.
Well, when I was being recruited, I was being recruited from Michigan and Michigan State. So, you know, it still was a close deal that I could have went to Michigan, but for Michigan State, you know, it didn't sit well with both. So they were recruiting me on the day of the signing date. You know, I always tell this story, the day of the signing date, the last day that you can, you know, when you make your decision, I went in and said, okay, well, I'm going to Michigan State, and that Coach Perlis, I mean, they had flew down, and I told him that I'm being coming to East Lansing. So when Bo Schembechler heard about it, right, they was trying to get in contact with me, but, you know, I was hiding out. You know, you, I mean, Bo, you know, you got that much, I got that much respect with Bo and Bo. You know, it was a hard thing. It was a hard thing to do. So I kind of like ducked and dodged him. And, you know, so he had one of the Elliott Hughes, like, that was the recruiter. He said, man, go to the, I don't care where you go, get to Dillard High School right now. And so he got to Dillard High School, and when I told him that's where I went, you know, he was like, I thought you wanted to win the Heisman Trophy.
Nobody at Michigan ever wins the Heisman Trophy. Well, they did later. They did later after that.
That's right. So, and I asked you about this. Michael Irvin's recruiting you to stay home and go to the U. And he goes with you.
It was the opposite. Me and Mike, you know, we were very close friends. And, you know, I said, Mike, we never took a trip together. You know, he was like, okay, well, I'm going to Michigan State with you. So we go to Michigan State, and we get there. We having a ball.
I want to hear about that.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, these days you can't talk much.
I know.
So, no, we had a good time there. And so we getting ready to head back. So we both get on the plane. I said, Mike, I said, man, we can come up here and we can do some things up here at this school, you know, this and that. So Mike looked at me and had this look on his face. And he said, this is not the place for me, but you got to be a damn fool not to go to Michigan State. And his exact words, Michael Irvin words.
Was there something Michigan did that you turned you off to even thinking about Michigan?
No, you know, my whole process as far as being recruited was, it was all business. And when it came down to Michigan, the school and all that, it was great. But I think more of the social side of Michigan State is what kind of swayed me. And as well as, I would say, you know, the coaches and the recruiter. Not that Bo and Coach Hughes like didn't do a great job. Like I said, it was just one of those tough things. You know, I picked Michigan State. You know, I felt sorry in the end for Bo Schembechler. Anytime you got a great coach, you know, he got that much respect. I had that much respect for him.
Sure.
85 was a great season. You had your sophomore season, over 2,000 yards. Amazing how you played that. You're 2,066 yards, 17 touchdowns. You're an All-American, and you finish fourth in the Heisman Trophy to some, I don't know, what was his name? Jackson, Bo Jackson.
Who was that?
Jackson was his name, I think. and Chuck Long, I mean, come on, Chuck, Robbie Bosco. They were all seniors, though. I know it still sticks in your craw because you actually had better stats that year than Bo Jackson.
He was a senior. Know, in my heart, I know that I did everything and I was number one to win the trophy. And for whatever reason, I learned later, you know, after that the political part of it, and I just went back and just did my research on it. In my heart, I know I put the numbers up, you can say at the time, you know, everybody was talking about who we played. You know, we played Iowa, the last maybe 3 minutes. They came and won the game. They was ranked number one. Our defense was ranked number one in the country. And that was like only the third game of the season.
Don't forget, Renzo, that they also voted for the Heisman before the bowl game. You not only wound up beating Bo Jackson in terms of yardage gained, but it was you. It was you, not Bo Jackson, who was named the College Football Running Back of the Year by the Touchdown Club of Columbus and by the Washington, D.C. Touchdown Club.
You know, my hat goes off to Bo. Tremendous athlete. Yeah. My thing is, like, you know, when it came down to me, I know what I did. The stats are there.
Sir, since you didn't win it that year and you were injured your junior, we knew that you were going to win it your senior year. I mean, that was obvious, right? Especially.
I mean 1,500 yards, the guy that wins the guy that wins the trophy, right? He only got two kickoff returns against us, you know. So.
Tim Brown won it back.
I mean, any other, you know. And now you look at that and you think about, okay, so now I'm thinking like, okay, now I got to be a sure in because they did it for both. Okay. Now 1500 yards, I'm only off 120 yards for the season. I think 1600 yards. I think Ironhead was probably leading it in most yards from scrimmage with 16 something. I had 15 something and I got to win it there. I mean, it's nobody with another Jackson. It wasn't another Jackson there.
Especially tell me this, all the records, all the running and all the other great things you did at Michigan State. What took so long to get into the Hall of Fame?
That's
it just
a good
didn't
question.
Make any sense to me.
Good question.
Ooh, that's another ridiculous. That's another funny story.
Talk about the College Football Hall of Fame, but go ahead.
Yeah, 9 times I was on the ballot. I mean, before I got in, right? I mean, it was so frequently, I was like, oh, when they told me, oh, you on the ballot again? I was like, oh, again? So I didn't really take it serious. And so I was coming home one day, right? I looked on the porch and it was this box, right? I see this box. And I opened it. It had confetti and say congratulations.
Oh.
And I opened that box and I take the confetti out. So I see the ball. I see the ball first. It said, welcome to the College Football Hall of Fame, you know, new inductee. I was like, look. So I said, man, am I reading this right? So I throw the ball down and I got the paper in it, and that's when I read the paper and I was like, oh, I'm in. After 9 times, I mean.
I'm sorry, Eli. You want to go ahead?
I want to go back to before we get lost here, because the 87 was a senior season. And some of the numbers that you put up, like against Indiana, 292 yards and 56 rushes. As we said earlier, Lorenzo right, Lorenzo left, Lorenzo at the middle. Listen to this from the game against Indiana that clinched the Big Ten championship and sent the Spartans to the Rose Bowl for the first time in 22 years.
With 12:34 to play in the first half, Lorenzo White's carried 15 times and he's over 100 yards. He's got 102 plus this. Boy, he is wound up today, isn't he? All the way down to the 21-yard line.
I kind of faded out a little bit, but yes, amazing how often you carried the ball. Did you ever?
Well, that was one shy of the all-time NCAA record.
Yeah,
56
yeah.
carries.
But the only reason why we couldn't break it. It's because everybody in the stands that was watching the game, they pretty much knew because they put it on the announcement on the PA. And the referee was like, come on, let's get it going. So I can get carried, right? So I told the referee to look behind him, right? All the students and everybody was in the end zone. So when he turned around and seen it, he was like, he blew the whistle. That was it, you know, because everybody, you couldn't get all those people out of the end zone.
No, I'm sorry. That was for what? Was it? Was that to set the record for rushes in a game? Is that what it was for?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That was the same thing. The Rose Bowl. Yeah.
After your great career at Michigan State, you're drafted by the Houston Oilers and you go to the NFL. You had an amazing season with the Oilers in 92. You rushed for 1,226 yards, 8 years in the league. But you'd been injured at State a couple times and you got hurt in the pros, didn't you? Did you enjoy the NFL? And is that what ended your career finally?
What I enjoy about the NFL, maybe not during that time, but when I look back and I got a little bit older, is all the doubters that kept saying when I first went to Houston. I played well. I had great camps when I was there. So I know I can play. But it was just, you know, you getting a chance to show and their coach is getting the confidence in you. So I had no problem with knowing that I can play well if they give me the chance. I just remember playing in Pittsburgh and it was snowing out. We were playing them and I mean, it snowed. I mean, I'm talking about, so Jerry Glanville was like, oh, he called me. He was like, come on, I want you, go in. So normally I went in a little bit early. So as soon as I got in, I finished up with 123 yards. After the game, they did the interview. They was like, oh, Glanville said he wanted to bring Bigfoot out. He said, he's good. He's good at this kind of weather. So, I mean, I remember talking with the, with one of the writers and one of the sports journalists, and I was like, I kind of see myself as the Goodyear architect. I can do it in any kind of weather, right? And they just kept that thing up. I mean, with the confidence. But you know, like I said, with the pros, it was like one thing after the other. But I gave me hope to prove to myself that I can do it. Oh, you can run the ball, but you can't catch. But do you? I mean, that whole year, nobody had more yards for me from catching the ball out of the backfield. I had 50 receptions.
57. You had 57 for 641 yards.
Yeah. And that's catching out the backfield. And you know, just proving people, you know, I was like, okay, well, I could have did this 2 years ago.
Yeah. Hey, Lorenzo, so you have a great year in 92, as Bob said. Remarkable season, 1,226 yards, 7 touchdowns and the 57 catches. But how does that compare when you look back or the enjoyment of playing as it was in college? Can anything compare to the college? Was the pros as much fun? Did that season give you the type of satisfaction you got in college? And what was the difference, if any?
You can never take away the play that you have in college. And, you know, with the excitement that Saturday when the whole, it's like everybody's for you. If you're playing at home, so you know the camaraderie that the crowd has, you and your players, the excitement when it's all said and done, and you go back to the dorm room or wherever you're at, and people, you know, talk about the game. It's not the same as the pros. Pros, it's fun after you make it. I had that dream. I always wanted to play in the pros. Once I got there, to me, it turned out to be like a job.
Who made the biggest difference in your life to become the player you became?
I would have to say my biggest fan was my mom. I mean, she worked hard and she was my biggest supporter in everything. I mean, more so when I went pro, she always was the one that told me you have to have patience, 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 patience. So when I look back, that's all I ever think about, you know, her telling me that just have patience. It's going to work out for you, but you got to still believe in what you can do.
Yeah.
Still got patience waiting for Bo Jackson to share the trophy with you.
Yeah, I told him every now and then, you know, when I say, I always tell him, man, let me come. I mean, won't you just let me rent it for a day?
Let's go. Hey, Renzo, if I were Mel Tucker, you would have been one of the first phone calls I would have made after I got the Michigan State job to help him recruit in South Florida. We don't know the guy at all. Have you met him? Have you spoken with him? Yes. What do you think about him getting the job? And what did you think about Mark D'Antonio resigning?
I just always said that his record speaks for itself and the things that he did, his wins and, you know, his record and things that he did. You know, we got a chance to do a dinner over in Naples, Florida. And I got a chance right after he had resigned. And, you know, he was just, you know, I just congratulated him. But as far as Coach Tucker, yes, he reached out to me and it was like, you know, he's already been there. And the people that brought me to Michigan State was the people that coached with him at Michigan State. Oh. So we all talked about it and it turned out to be a great hire.
We don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet.
Well, I mean, just for, I mean, not, I mean, no success, you know, I mean, because we haven't played football yet.
Did he ask you to help recruit or anything like that?
Well, sure.
Or help with
the
team?
Well, I think that's what it's all about. I mean, that ain't something that he had to, you know, I bleed green and white. I wear green and white every day. So, you know, everything that I have to do to get my team ahead, you know, I'm going to do, you know, I used to coach football university. So I had a chance to, you know, to see like a lot of the athletes, you know, firsthand because we was training them. And I got a lot of, you know, just a lot of connects when I talk to like coaches. But it's just more so for me, I just want to see our program succeed. Sure. And anything that I can do to help it, I will do it.
Well, last thing for you is you 2019, last year, big year, obviously, the College Football Hall of Fame, and they put you on the Ring of Fame. I haven't been there in a while to see who's on it, and I kept on looking it up. I know Gibson was put on there. I'm sure Bubba Smith, Webster. I didn't even know who's on there. I think there's a dozen
or so. Brad Van Pelt.
Van Pelt is on there, too. You know, George Webster, I imagine, is on there, too. Is George Webster on there?
Yes.
You know, what are your thoughts about that, and have you met the greats from the Spartans past? You know, do you know
any? I'm very connected to the school. So I do a lot of stuff for the school. So I'm always there at events and, you know, Kirk Gibson, you know, Bubba Smith when he was alive, mm-hmm. and George Webster. So, and then not only that, you know, George Webster was in Houston.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
My last question, Lorenzo, is obviously about COVID-19. The college football season's up in the air. The Big Ten has said so far it's not going to play. Should college football be playing universally? And if you were still in college, would you want to play during a pandemic like this?
To me, I think more what I'm pissed off about is that everybody's not together. Nobody came together on it. Everybody has their reasons for it. Everybody should be on one accord. I think when it comes down to the pandemic, is the kids are more important than the game.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we should be jeopardizing ourselves. And, you know, and you could have probably iced me that, because at that time when I was playing, you know, I love the game. I want to play. The same thing is with these kids now. They just want to play.
Right.
You know, and at the end of the day, I get it. I don't want anybody to come down with COVID, you know, and have something happen, tragic happen, and then we'll be responsible for it because we wanted to play a football game.
Good for you, conservative approach. I'm surprised to hear you say that.
Good for you.
Lorenzo, best of luck in the future. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame, the Ring of Fame. All that stuff.
All in 2019, too, Eli. Yeah. What a big year for
you. It's nice. We all want to be remembered and be show and know that we did something significant, that we affected people. And I know that that's probably filled your heart in the last year, knowing that you still matter, you're still significant, and you're still a big part of all that you helped build there at Michigan State. So thanks for joining us, Lorenzo.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day. Stay safe.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay, we'll talk to you. Bye-bye. And we also would be remiss if we did not thank Eli, our mutual friend, and that would be Stan Stein down there, for setting the interview up. Stan is Mr. Michigan State, baby. Okay. And Lorenzo was speaking to us from Stan's condo in Fort Lauderdale, which is otherwise referred to as the Michigan State University Sports Museum.
That's why before the interview started on the side, I said, have you had a chance of using the commode with the Michigan State toilet seat on it, because everything else there, you know, I'm surprised he doesn't crap green down there. thanks everybody for listening to another edition of No Filter Sports. We'll be back on Thursday for another edition. Enjoy your week. Stay safe.